Well, Thomas isn't here today. He is busy again, but he will promise us that he will be back next week. He is outsourcing lots of nice flavours, and he's out of the country at the moment. He's on fun as jollies.
Well, for some, isn't it?
Yeah, it is all right for some, isn't it? But the podcast is number 89, podcast 89, and today we are joined by HID, and we're talking about CBD and the medical reclassification of CBD.
Yeah, I guess it's the legal situation around CBD being accepted as a medicine, isn't it?
Yeah.
And where that leaves us.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the MHRA. Mm-hmm. The MHRA have recently reclassified it as a medicinal product now, and the reason that we've got HID is because you sell CBD products under Endoka.
So we're a distributor.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah.
Sorry, not obviously to everyone, but you. So we distribute Endoka, Enecta, and we created our own brand, CBD Detox.
Yeah.
To create some slightly innovative or new products to bring to the market at the time, because it was still, you know, open for development, I guess. So we started looking at it October last year. Just over a year ago. The legal situation with import was very big at the time even, so we spoke to the Home Office several times, couldn't get a clear answer out of them. So we sort of decided we'd order a small amount, because it was coming in from Europe. I don't think we had any issues. It was all certified less than the 0.2% THC. Yeah. So we didn't have any issues, which is great. We started selling it. That was Endoka and Nectar products. And that was in the February, I think, we got our first shipment in and started selling from there. Going good. We, as you know, like, we focus a lot on the technical side of things. So one of our staff, Claire, who works on the sales desk, also has a degree in medical pharmacology. And you know, when she applied for the job on the sales desk, we, you know, thought we'd kind of hit the jackpot, but knowing we had this coming through in the background,
like Thomas did when he employed me a little bit.
So
maybe not.
No, yeah, he did. Yeah. But it's so, from our point of view, we've always come at it from that more clinical standpoint. Because, you know, the reality is, as much as people want to say they're selling it as a food stuff or as a sports supplement, let's face it, you know, the reason the MHRA have made their decision is because people are using it for medicinal purposes, for treating conditions.
Yeah.
Whether it be, you know, on a lower level or on a high level, people with cancer, where provides pain relief, anti-inflammatory properties, you know, to MS sufferers, to people with,
it's an anti-emetic as well, isn't it?
Yeah, there's so many benefits now. So from where we've come from February to now, the last couple of months, when we started in February, I believe there were maybe like four or five products on the market here in the UK. Come sort of summertime, there were maybe 20 to 30, and now there are even more than that. You go on Amazon and there are reams of products available. A lot of them are misadvertised in terms of the amount of CBD that's in the product, and they got the volume calculations wrong and all that kind of stuff. A lot of it's rebottled anyway, so there shouldn't be any, you know, you get it from the manufacturer, you should know what percentage it is and what, how many milligrams are in there. But when people are left to their own to do these things, where, you know, you could be somebody sitting in their lounge rebottling this stuff and putting it on Amazon or eBay.
Twice as much CBD.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's not been classified or registered.
No,
or
not regulated in any way.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, we would tend to agree with the decision, as harsh as it seems. Like, I think we made it a little bit sharply, as it were.
It seemed to come out of nowhere, didn't it?
Without any real sort of plan, but at the same time, they've widened the window now. And I'm sure that there's a couple of different organisations. Obviously, most of people in our industry would be aware of CLEAR and the UK Cannabis Trade Association, that are pushing for their type of regulation, and we've got things that we're working on in the background as well. So hopefully it'll work out for the best, that there will be product widely available, but they'll be manufactured to the right standards, and they'll be advertised in the right way, labelled properly, and that, you know, people will have good quality advice to help them in taking, you know, getting the product that's right for them, in the right doses and the right method of application.
What variety of products do you do? I know that you do like a pen, which is easy to take out and remove, and you've got tinctures and...
Yeah, so the Endoka range includes capsules, oil tinctures. They've even gone on to develop like a shush product. They do the crystals as well, so you've got the 99% crystals. They've got, you know, developed lip balm and all kinds of stuff. Enacta were purely the e-liquids initially. Mm. And then from a CBD tox point of view, the way we looked at it was we Endoka's suppositories was another product. The reason I mention that is because it leads us on to where we were taking our product range.
Mm.
So we were looking at it from the point of view of absorption. Suppositories are the highest level of absorption, yeah. 80% of all the products that
are available. Testing,
yeah,
it?
Basically. So it was, people are uncomfortable with that here in this country. You know, in other European countries, they don't really, you know,
talk about it.
It's just kind of the normal thing for them, whereas here we're a little bit weird about it.
Suppositories.
Exactly. Not doing that. Yeah. You know, whatever. Like, it's not a test of your manhood or anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like where you get people who are cancer and things like that, they're in that situation where they'll try anything, basically. So that's what kind of tends to cut to the quick.
Yeah.
But for other people, and in terms of the highest level of absorption, we looked at nasal.
Mm.
So we were in the process of developing, we're about to manufacture a nasal spray, because that's basically on a par in terms of absorption. It'll be around 80%, similar to suppositories.
Yeah.
So there's no one doing that. So that's something that we, all being well, if there's regulation approved, that we'll push ahead with that. But, you know, that, in terms of any application, it's straight in the bloodstream, passing it around the whole body, and obviously quick access to the brain. So for things like anxiety, where it helps to treat that, it's right next to the brain. So and you know, lower strength product, much higher absorption, so you can get away, it's more effective, and you get out of the lower strength product.
Okay.
And
they've got a website, so if you want to have a little look at what they've classified it as, I pulled off basically what some of their quotes, and then they've said that we have come to the opinion that products containing cannabidiol CBD used for medical purposes are a medicine. Medicinal products must have a product license, marketing authorization before they can be legally sold, supplied or advertised in the UK unless exempt. Licensed medicinal products have to meet safety, quality and efficacy standards to protect public health. So we were talking there before the podcast went live about those points, safety, quality and efficacy. Now, HID being a very moral company would either have the products tested or know that where they come from.
Yep.
They've been tested, certified and you sell them as are.
That's it. So anyone we brought the bulk in from to make our e-liquids, for example, that we know that those companies all use organic certified materials to begin with. So
name those three companies again just for the people.
Endoka, Enacta, and those are the two that we bring in from.
Yeah.
And then the CBD Detox, that was our own brand.
CBD Detox.
CBD
Detox.
That was Andy's.
Nice one, Andy. Good name. Don't live off that though for the rest of the next few years, eh? That was my name.
So, but, no, I think it's in, let's go back to the MHRA thing. So they've offered an opinion, and anyone who's following this and following in the clear thing and Peter Reynolds and that, they've put some strong stuff out there about questioning the MHRA's legal authority and that kind of stuff. I know they're taking legal advice and all that kind of thing, which is all well and good, and they may be able to, there may be some loopholes and different things, but to be honest, some of the documentation I found online, as I said to you earlier, around what their actual powers are, is from my, as far as I understand it, and the people that I've spoken to, is that if they make a decision that it's a medicine, there's very little you can do about it, and they can literally shut you down. You know, if you're doing it after that deadline, if they really want to, they can. You know, again, if they really want to, they can literally shut you down. And seize your business and investigate you for proceeds of crime and all blah, blah. You know, they could put you out of business if they wanted to. So just you have to be really careful with these things. I think it's a bit much to be kind of going out there telling people they've got no authority.
Yeah.
They have all the authority.
Well, if you go on the website, and I didn't have a chance to click on all of the links, but some of the links that were on there, they were, and I'm not going to try and guess, but they were looking at e-cigarettes, and basically they have powers over pharmaceutical companies and suppliers of e-cigarettes. They could, I think they were looking at the amount of nicotine within them and making sure that the amount of nicotine on the labels was correct.
Yeah.
And they can shut that shit down.
Absolutely.
And that's a pharmaceutical company, a multi-million pound pharmaceutical company.
Yeah.
So if you start thinking, anyone that's watching, oh, they can't do this and they can't do that, this and these have got powers, and it's...
They're the Queen's agents.
Yeah.
Within reason, you know, obviously, the miscarriages of justice and all that aside.
But when
know,
it comes to medicinal products,
they can do what they like within reason. So, yeah, it's, I'd say to any producers out there that are listening, you know, be careful, you know, stick within, you know, do it in the right way, which is what we're trying to do as well. So
some people's arguments is that The MHRA have classified it now as medicinal, which we've all known for mm-hmm. a very long time. There's an abundance of research out there to say so.
Mm-hmm.
What people's arguments are that the MHRA have just done this so that their friends in mm-hmm. government and the people that are doing Sativex, what's the company now? The
GW
Pharmaceuticals,
yeah.
have done Sativex and another one. So making it medicinal, making not allowing other companies around the UK, small companies, to produce it without spending thousands of pounds on licences. Yeah. It puts it all into the pockets of these pharmaceutical mm-hmm. companies. But again, we were having a chat before, and it's probably going to be... I think it is beneficial in the long run.
Yeah.
In the short term, possibly not so beneficial for the people that need the CBD now that they've been getting from yourselves, because you're going to have to go through a whole process, aren't you?
Well, it depends on how they play it from here, effectively. I think they made the right decision. Mm. I think to give people a short window to... It was almost like a short, sharp shock, I think, in terms of getting people to stop what they were doing.
Yeah.
So maybe it was
effective. Because he put a really early deadline on it.
Yeah, it was literally give you 30 days.
First November, I mean, or something.
It was 30 days from the date they wrote the letter to the certain companies.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was effective in that respect. They've obviously widened the deadline now. They've had some pressure, I believe, from people in Parliament and other groups. That's had the desired effect the other way, but I think they've left themselves enough of a window to be able to decide, you know, take the time to think it through and decide what's the best structure for this, what's the best way to take it forward. So, you know, we'll see. As I said before, the UK Cannabis Trade Association have been posted, they've had a meeting with the MHRA, so they're obviously open to talking to groups about potential regulatory structures which will enable people to have access to the product.
Yeah.
So that's good, and it shows willing on their part, which is great. And I know, as I mentioned to you before, that we are working on our own group in the background. So we're starting the European Cannabinoid Therapy Association, which is European-wide, involving myself and seven or eight other people from around Europe, like high-level people within the industry, coming from a scientific background with research and a lot of knowledge on the phytochemical balance in the plant, how to produce it, you know, how to control all of that, and then the interaction with the body, the physiological processes in the body, and how to apply it. So between that group of people, I think there's enough knowledge there to be able to put a really good structure together, not just for regulation of companies selling products, but also for education. I think that's the key thing for us in the group, is education.
Yeah.
Because... as I said to you before, it's one thing going, you know, yes, it should be available. Don't take it away from people. I agree with that. Mm. You shouldn't just unjustly take something that's currently free and preferably natural and organic away from people. However, the people that are then selling that product should have the appropriate knowledge to do so.
Yeah.
I don't think you can justify selling it as a foodstuff, personally, because as a food supplement, because it's obvious they've made the decision based on the fact that everyone's using it to treat these conditions on whatever level. Now, you know, a low strength, something of widely available, that might be fine, but I still think there should be someone in every business. The reason we hired, you know, not the reason we hired Claire, but the benefit for us of having Claire is that she has that background.
Yeah.
She kind of is a sounding board for us on what's right, what's the right way to go with this, that and the other. And if we get any questions from therapists or from patients, we can answer those questions legitimately
through someone who's been through university, studied pharmacology, and has the real knowledge.
Absolutely.
On it.
And if we're not sure, we'll go and ask somebody else who does know.
Mm.
That's the thing. I think to just have a website just selling the stuff, you know, to anyone and everyone, you can say a low strength might be fine for it to that too widely available. But there's, if, take children for example.
Mm.
You know, if someone's trying to treat their child and they just will have a crack with a low strength, you know, it might impact on another medicine that the child's taking for that condition.
Yeah.
And you don't know what ramifications that will have. So this is where education is absolutely crucial.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the two points that I want to pick up on, for people that are still a little bit, not confused, but angry about the reclassification.
Yeah.
Firstly, let's give you examples, would you want a member of your family or one of your good friends that's suffering from ABCD, whatever it is that CBD is effective at treating, would you want to then go out and spend hundreds of pounds on something that you don't 100% know is effective? So it says it has a certain ratio of CBD, active compounds within the oil, or whatever way you're taking it. And actually, you'd find out that it doesn't have anywhere close
exactly,
to that.
Yeah.
So you're being mugged off, essentially. You're paying money to these companies to put put profits into their back pockets. Yeah. They don't really care that much about you because they haven't had a clap test.
Yeah, and you don't know who they get. You don't know who these people are. And like, I could sit in my front room, bottle some stuff, but you know, buy something from somebody else, buy it in bulk, put my own bottles and labels on it, and it could be like full of contaminants. Could be, and you know, we're not
saying everyone is.
Yeah, we're not into scaremongering. Mm. Don't you know? We're not trying to be ridiculous about
it. You need to make sure that what you're taking is right.
Absolutely,
and right ratios.
If you go and, you know, buy some paracetamol off the shelf at Boots, you know that that's produced to a certain standard, and there is advice, and you can only buy so many packets at a time for a reason. Because it's still, even though it's widely available, it's still a dangerous substance. Mm.
The second part was, as you said before, the interactions. So, that because probably the majority of people watching this know that CBD works. If you don't, there's plenty of research on Google Scholar, academic research. It works for a reason. It's not placebo. It works for a very good reason. And because it works, it means it's going to be interacting with the body. Now, you mentioned before that people that are suffering from any ailments that they take for this, they've probably already taken other things to help it out. Mm-hmm. And now we're not going to get into the big biology of it all, but CBD and the liver and any drugs that you're taking interact in the liver.
So. Yeah, I think we can do it very briefly. Yeah. So within the liver, it's called the first pass system. When you ingest something, it goes through the liver, whatever else. There is an enzyme in there called the CP450 enzyme. You can research that if you want. But tests have shown that CBD is prioritised by that enzyme. So what it means is whatever else is in there to be broken down, a lot of drugs that are ingested are passed through the liver, and they're designed so that CP450 enzyme breaks them down, and after that they are then active. So because that enzyme prioritises CBD, if you're taking another medication, it means that the breakdown is inhibited, therefore it's not having the effect it should do. That's not, as I said before, not always necessarily a bad thing. Things like, you know, MS or epilepsy, etc., CBD is more effective anyway, it seems, in some cases.
Yeah.
You know, this is the grey area we're in. So, but you have to be careful in terms of, you know, this is the concern for me over just like having stuff available widely. Even, you know, even at like what's low, you know, 3%, there are 3% products that we sell from Madoka, which I would say are fairly harmless, but that's even. You know, we had one of our members of staff, that one of their parents has, problems with the joints.
Rheumatoid arthritis.
That's it, yeah. And just the 3% capsules taken and made a world of difference. Mm. So, but that shows you the level it can have, the different level of effect it can have in a full-grown human to basically, whether it's the pain relief or whether it affects the actual action of the joints.
Rheumatoid arthritis, it's an inflammatory disease within the joints, isn't it? So it's anti-inflammatory of CBD.
Yeah, so it's this is where, and it affects everyone differently. Mm. So even it's for a 3% product to have that much of an effect on in the grown human, not just a child. Yeah. You know, like it shows you that even at that level, it's still fairly potent in its effect. Yeah. But that's a good thing. But
that's good for an adult, but maybe not great for a child.
Well, so this one, it's like low strength. What's low strength? You might think 3% is low strength, but in certain things, it's like enough to have that much of an impact on a grown human being. Therefore, we have to be really careful about what we classify as low strength. And the other thing is, every human's different. Our chemical balance is different. Mm. Went to a global medical chemist summit in Dublin back in September, and Professor Mike Barnes sort of gave a little bit of a talk on the peer review study that he released recently. And one of the points he made was that the difficult thing is, for some people, THC is better for pain relief, and CBD does nothing.
Yeah.
For some people, CBD gives them pain relief, THC does nothing. That shows you the difficulty of this situation with developing cannabinoid therapies in the wider scope of things.
Mm. Talking about THC, the podcast is on about CBD. The reason it's been reclassified as medicinal is because of everything that it does. So I pulled up some of the medicinal properties of CBD. I wouldn't say these aren't 100% proven. Mm-hmm. These are what people are seeing. Yeah. But when I say anecdotally, a lot of people are seeing this. You only have to go onto Netflix or the documentaries that you can find on Sky and Virgin Media. You can see kids of 4 or 5, reduced seizures, gone from 300 a day to 1 a day. This stuff works.
Just on that as well, a lot of these things, you go on land, do your research, you will find that there are studies supporting the evidence. There's studies on mice or, you know, animals closely related in their DNA structure to us and similar physiological mechanisms. So that's how it works. You do the tests on the animals and then you got to do human efficacy trials, which the GW Pharmaceuticals have been doing on their Epidiolex, which is a CBD-based product. So these benefits have, most of these, I think we probably find, have been proven in animals similar to us.
Yeah.
They just haven't been clinically proven. Yeah.
Which is what it needs to get to market, So some of the things are an antiemetic, which is reduces vomiting and nausea. People who have been taking it, people going through chemotherapy, obviously reduces the appetite.
Which is, briefly on that, like, this is where the whole thing becomes really interesting. With things like cancer, for example, where people are trying to recover from that, chemotherapy is effective. People don't know that's effectively killing you. And running your system right down, and then they bring you back and hope that the cancer died. That's effectively what chemo is. It's kind of crazy.
Non-targeted. Cell destruction. Just, isn't it?
Mental, really. But the point being, because your body's under that much stress, most people, obviously, you see people in chemo, they lose their hair, the body weight drops dramatically, and the fact that your body is so run down means that you really struggle to recover. So when the chemo finishes and you come back from that, your body's not strong enough to fight as well. So
any small coughs, colds,
anything hits you like a hammer, doesn't it? So that's where CBD can have a benefit in terms of reducing the nausea, increasing appetite. You know, there's and just like helping people recover from the chemo, put them in a position, putting their body in a position to be strong enough to fight.
That's a huge nutrition's thing. A massive thing for human health. That's what I did my master's in. I know the importance of good quality food, chemotherapy. I'm pretty certain that it has an impact on an area of the brain that suppresses ghrelin, which is a hormone for appetite. Okay. That's why you don't feel like eating.
Yeah.
Because it's an antiemetic with the CBD, reduces nausea, and it stimulates ghrelin within the body, the hormone for making you hungry. So you eat more, so your immune system goes up. And if you're eating good, healthy food, not this McDonald's and Burger King but if you're eating good, healthy food, that by itself is can have a world massive difference,
exactly. I mean, the interesting thing, I was reading, watching some videos a while back about mitochondrial activity and cell energy, and how, you know, with a lot of cancers, there's an association with lower cell energy and anaerobic respiration, and cancer cells thrive in that. So it's almost like, you know, you need to create that high level energy, and without the proper nutrition and all that, it's not going to happen.
I have to say this as well. And when we talk about proper nutrition, please don't be duped into people often associate taking CBD with an alkaline diet, because cancer can't form can't survive in an acidic environment. I just have to say that any food that you eat has absolutely no impact on the blood pH, absolutely no impact whatsoever. If it did, the body is really good at maintaining body pH between 7.3 and 7.34. If it fluctuates above or below that, it's really bad news. So the food that you eat has no impact on blood pH. Where it stems from with the alkaline diet is that typically alkaline foods tend to be your fruits, your vegetables, your whole grains, your nuts and your seeds. Acidic foods tend to be your red meats,
the
carbohydrates, basically McDonald's and chocolate and highly processed foods. So in a sense, alkaline foods, yes, but all without going out and buying a book, all it means is eat good food, fruit and veg, healthy oils, grains, seeds, fish. It's not rocket science at the end of the day.
From some of the stuff I've, again, similar video, is like oxidation is key. Exercise is massive.
Yeah.
Increasing your cells' oxygen levels and their energy, you know, and the way they process energy in terms of running on exercise and at a low level, burning fat is oxidative and that's really beneficial. And that, I believe that's where cancer can survive in a high oxygen environment. So it's when your cells are respiring anaerobically too much because you're eating too much starches and all that, and you're teaching your cells to respire anaerobically. You're creating those anaerobic conditions, and then an event will happen and cancer goes.
In a nutshell, if it costs you money to learn something from somebody alkaline diet, but be a bit skeptical about it. Eat healthily, and maybe take some CBD. But let's get back onto the CBD. I can get carried away with nutrition a little bit. Anticonvulsant suppresses seizure activity. All I will say on this part, and you might want to add to it, is go on to Netflix and Charlotte's Web. You can actually think it's TEDx Boulder, and you can see the guys in Boulder talking about Charlotte's Web, how they took it from 300 seizures a day to less than one a day, purely on the CBD. Yep. And there's hundreds of other
The evidence is out there. Obviously, like I said, one of the big reasons it's had such a development in the US is because of that. You know, you got people moving states to be in a state where it's, they can get hold of it legally. And
a lot of people move to Colorado.
Get their life back. You know, if you've got two parents that are effectively full-time carers, even if one of them can go back to work and earn some money and, you know, better life for the family and all that. So, yeah.
Antipsychotic can combat psychosis disorders. Mm-hmm. Talking a little bit about that. Now, there's certain agencies or people or sectors within the government that say, they probably don't say about CBD because it's proven that it's got no side effects. Mm-hmm. THC, though, is probably a little bit further away from being medicinalised because it has, for some people, unwanted side effects. Mm-hmm. Some people don't react well to those side effects, just like some people don't react well to alcohol. Some people become alcoholics.
It comes back to education and understanding it and having someone who's qualified and you know has been through a training program to understand all of the physiological interactions and the ramifications and trying to understand the person's chemical balance and how that will affect it. That's the key.
It takes a lot of science and investigation to get to the bottom of anti-inflammatory. Your man with his mum who had rheumatoid arthritis friend had rheumatoid arthritis. Anti-inflammatory, and again, you've probably seen, if you're into the UFC, you may have seen Nate Diaz with a CBD pen.
Absolutely.
Massive for the...
From our point of view, that was the reason we went with CBD detox, is from that point of view, detoxing after, you know, an event, really, we're looking at the sport and market, if possible, because it has huge benefits. You look at, I don't know, you've got stuff on the list there, but the way it can help and repair the neurons in the brain, it can improve hand-eye coordination, and, you know, sleep patterns, so, and anti-stress. So you've got a high level athlete that's flying halfway across Europe and back on a Wednesday night. Even from a football point of view, you know, you've got a Europe Champions League game on a Wednesday night or Europa League on a Thursday, and you're flying to Russia basically, and then it's a long flight, you're back. It's a lot of stress on the body, and then you gotta they've got to have a sleep, and you're gonna up, train, then you gotta get your sleep in the middle of the day and train again. You know, it's almost like there's a lot of pressure, and then you come into the game night, people aren't going to be able to sleep the night before a match. There are huge potential benefits there for athletes at that level.
Yeah, and I think, again, I'm probably preaching to the choir for people that are watching this. Yeah, so, but CBD, we have endogenous cannabinoids. We produce them naturally in the body. We have CB1, CB2 receptors and a whole host of other things within the body. And essentially, we just improve and we're adding to them. It may even become one day a part of nutrition, a part of your diet. Increase your CBD.
Just on that, the CB receptors aren't necessarily in every cell in your body. Mm. They tend to be in your inner and outer brain, the nervous system, and your major organs. Mm. And the anandamide, that's it.
Yeah.
That's the compound that your body produces, supposed to produce naturally to trigger those receptors, and then there's a chain effect. Suppression of anandamide is one of the key things, but also blocking of receptors, other things. Mm. The CBD doesn't necessarily interact with, say, the CB1 receptor, and doesn't always necessarily react with the CB2 receptor, but it helps to improve anandamide production, I believe. And all that. And then, some of the research we've done recently, and it's pretty big actually, if you consider this. So, adenine, which is a compound in the energy molecule, adenine,
guanine, cytosine.
It's basically building block, but it's adenine triphosphate. So you get the adenine cycle, or the Krebs cycle.
Oh ATP.
So, comes out of it, and there's a receptor involved in that process. Now there are also four other adenine receptors. You can search all this on the cell, and they're in most cells in the body. So what the body does in response to stress, so if I dig you in the arm now, you'll feel pain and your body will react.
Yeah.
So what it does is the cell will release three times as much adenine as it normally is around the cell.
Yeah.
And all that adenine fills those other receptors and they trigger vasodilation, nerve cell signaling, and also flight or flight response.
Yeah.
And different things. So that's like that's in every cell in the body. Mm. And it, from what we believe, it's not absolute confirmation, but from the research we've done, it seems that CBD can actually interact with those other adenine receptors.
Mm-hmm.
So where you're getting things like it's reducing heart rate, anti-anxiety, all the kind of stuff, that's probably the reason why it's happening, is because and that's adenine's, like you say, it's a building block, and it's those receptors in every cell in your body. So it's the fact that CBD can have the same impact as the building block of your DNA is a bit mental, really.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
In terms of it's, you know, it's like effectively kicking your immune system into gear. It's really mad.
It's impressive what it can do. It's like I'm really excited. You know what things are coming up for us in 2017. It's and I'm proper pumped about finding out what CBD can actually do.
That's it. I think
there's three more things. Antioxidants combats neurodegenerative disorders. I'm really interested to see what impact it can have on Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Alzheimer's, it builds up a plaque in the brain and distorts memory and obviously memory loss.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-tumour, anti-cancer, combats tumour and cancer cells, and then antidepressants as well for anxiety and depression disorders. It's like, and you know what, they're probably just not, that's not everything that it can
absolutely
do either.
Yeah. It's a whole myriad of things, like I said, sleep, patterns and things you can, you know, we're talking earlier about different chemical balance, how it affects people differently. I'll give an example. So if I take, I got the high strength capsules because I'm busy working, you know, do a lot of hours in the evening and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So occasionally I'll like take a capsule before I go to bed. I sleep like absolutely flat out.
Mm.
We've got a 1 year old and he's up, you know, two or three times a night.
Yeah, yeah.
And my wife's like, you didn't wake up last night. Yeah. Like a log, you know. But I wake up feeling good because I've had a really solid sleep.
Yeah.
But it's not good, you know, if you had no, like, you know, symptoms.
Even when you're not taking the tablets, you're like, oh, you know what? I didn't need it because I had one of them CBD capsules, didn't I? Sorry about that.
Yeah. So that's how it affects me. Now, my colleague, he takes it and he feels uplifted from it.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't make me feel like that. So that's just, you know, in terms of the benefits that it brings, it makes me sleep like an absolute log. It's great, you know, and I wake up feeling really refreshed. Whereas other people, it makes them like they can have it first thing in the morning, they feel good for the day.
Yeah.
Now, I still feel good for the day after that, you know, they can sort of feel nice and relaxed, mentally focused, you know. But for other people, it's just interesting how it works different people. And that's what I think, like, you're talking about the research and everything else. So what we're trying to do with the ECTA group is, because some of the people involved are top research scientists in the field, we'll be looking to regulate CBD producers and also potentially cannabis producers in legal countries like Germany, Italy, etc.
Yeah.
And these guys are involved in writing the legislation for these countries right now, Germany and Italy and Czech. Croatia, I think, has already got their processes in place. These guys are implementing next year, and the people involved with the ECTA group are writing the legislation around quality control and education around cannabinoid and therapies, etc. So the aim for us is to, you know, our time will be funded by the revenue from certification and education programs, etc. But excess funding can go towards research and independent research, you know, that's sort of, rather than relying on the likes of GW Pharmaceuticals, and not that I have anything to say about those, I wouldn't badmouth anybody else, but
they have a bad link, don't they, if it's funded by pharmaceutical companies, big pharma, so because they want to get
it's tied up for them, basically, and they can, you know, in the US, for example, as an example, the Epidiolex, where it's, I believe they've just secured orphan drug status in the US for Epidiolex as a CBD product. That gives them 7 years exclusivity in that market for a CBD product of that nature, specifically for epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, you know, so it's not ideal.
Yeah,
really.
If it was open, there's going to be a lot more research.
Independent research, where it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's there, it's proven. If we can do trials not linked to a specific product, but it's linked to the compound, and then it's companies can, you know, it sort of shortcuts all the the messing around, really. That's the goal.
Yeah. Someone's just said there, I missed the start. What company does this guy work for? It's HID, Hydro Industry Direct.
Yeah. So my name's Liam. I work for Hydro Industry Direct. We're a distributor based just outside Birmingham. We also work in other fields, so we're getting involved in CBD and going down that sort of healthcare route.
Yeah. Yeah. Just last thing on the MHRA. So there was an update on the 1st of November, so people have got other companies that may be selling CBD. You've essentially got till the end of this year.
End of December
to stop selling it, essentially. Mm-hmm. And they've said, while MHRA has given its opinion that products containing cannabidiol used for medicinal purposes are medicines, we have also carefully considered the needs of individuals using CBD products to treat or manage the symptoms of medical conditions, hence the extension.
Yeah.
Our primary concern is patient safety. In order to ensure that products remain available until individuals have the opportunity to discuss their treatment with their doctor, companies now have until the 31st of December to voluntarily operate within the law by withdrawing their existing products from the market or working with MHRA to satisfy the legal requirements of the Human Medicines Regulations 2012. And they say they've written to the manufacturers to aware them of this, and it is vital that medicines meet safety, quality and efficacy standards to protect public health.
Yeah.
They said prevent public health. I mean, the opposite of what they want.
Yeah.
So I can understand where people are coming from. MHRA, government body.
Yeah, taking something off the market.
Yeah, because they're the small man's profits, and let's give it to the big pharmaceutical companies.
I think, let's be fair, if people had been doing it right, this wouldn't have happened.
As Andy said, that's what got us
the charlatans.
Yeah, from number of charlatans selling CBD, that was well below purported CBD percentage.
Unfortunately, with any new market like that where it is unregulated, you're going to get people. It's like working hydroponics. You get people try opening the shop because they think it's easy, and they think they've been using products for a number of years. They think, I can do this. Mm. I know what I'm doing. And they don't understand the money that it takes to get stocked up, the running the premises, etc., keeping your customers happy, etc., etc. There's always more to it than people think, and if you're trying to do things on the cheap, then that's what's going to happen, isn't it?
You're going to be run out as well, because you can't do things on the cheap, unfortunately. Yeah. Otherwise, you end up selling cheap products. And the great thing, in my opinion, about this industry is that although there's cheap, shoddy products being sold, eventually you get found out. You can't bring a product to market. So I'm going to bring out this new product. It's called Still Water, and I'm going to sell for £50 for a litre. And what you do is at the end, you run it through your plants as a flush.
Yeah.
And it's that, essentially.
You're killing me, because that was one of my thought pieces.
Oh, shit.
I hate flush products.
Just run water through them.
Get out of here.
You're not a fan of them?
No. I mean... Genuinely, because I used to work for another company in the industry, and they make their own nutrients as well. And I know that I've spoken to people who make nutrients and have tested the efficacy of the nutrients, and flush doesn't make a damn bit of difference.
Could be one of the tests that we do in our lab.
I'm absolutely happy to hear from anyone out there who has seen a big difference from using a flush product.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear it from you.
Okay, you're making the cogs away now, and how we can figure out whether these flush products work or not.
I'm more than happy to be wrong always.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I work, I don't mind, but as far as I'm aware, I've been told it's been proper testing and don't make a line bit of difference. So.
Well, what I would have thought about them is that it's, instead of going from having nutrition to completely not having nutrition, maybe a little bit stressful for the plant.
Mm.
So having maybe something that's humic and fulvic in there just for the first couple of days, just to let the plant know it's at the end of its life, and don't stress, you're going to reproduce.
So, I suppose to a degree, you can put benefits, things in there, but then humics and fulvics are more for transport into the plant.
Yeah.
I think if you're looking at, vitamin C type products, something that's going to help convert oil conversion and generation, that kind of thing, I can understand.
Okay.
Because all you're trying to do is, but everything in there that last week, anything you put in the tank, the plant's not going to really get the chance to use it.
Yeah.
By the time it's sort of transported up, converted through photosynthesis and then transported, you're talking about a big plant. Things move relatively slowly within the plant, so by the time it gets up to the leaf, goes, gets converted in photosynthesis and then transported to the to the flower side and then convert it into tissue.
Yeah.
It's unlikely
the Brussels sprouts are already on your table beaming for Christmas, aren't they?
For the most part. So that's why that week, you know, that's why that week pushes. So you don't, there's no point putting the extra food in because anything you put in, you're wasting. Mm. Something there which helps conversion into something useful,
yeah.
You know, creation of sugars or oils, that's what you want in that last week, because you want the plant to effectively empty itself.
Yeah. You know what, there's that much focus on the big products, the boosters, the PKs, yeah. All this. We're doing a test on root stimulators. Yeah. Little old flush probably just gets forgotten about, and people are probably like that. Oh, look, flush, no one's going to look into flush because it's only a flush. You can get them for quite cheap.
Yeah.
Let's just get an extra £10-15 out of them.
Absolutely.
So let's investigate.
I'm not being funny. Like, we run a business, we said before, like, the world, you know, you need money to live.
Mm.
That's how it is. But at the same time, there's ethics and morals around doing that.
Mm-hmm.
We sell 3 or 4 different nutrient products. None of them have a flush product.
Yeah.
You know, and our owners have been manufacturing these products for 20 years.
Mm.
If it needed a flush, it'd have a flush.
Yeah.
Green Planet have got, you know, we keep it tight here in the UK because we don't want to, you know, be overselling people effectively. So that's the kind of company we are. We want to keep it easy for you and not sell you products you don't need. And they've got 20 odd different products on the market over there.
Mm.
I don't believe they got a flush product.
Yeah. Says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If they could have a flush product, they would.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. Just before we finish up and talk, I want to round up, do a little bit of a nutshell about the CBD. I'm a big fan, and while I've got you into the studio, the Spectrum King.
Yeah, okay.
It's one of my favourite products. It's one of me. It's an LED. There's a lot of LEDs on the market, and we've tested a lot of them as well. LEDs got a bad rap a few years ago because they didn't have it quite right. They've been sold for a lot of money, and people are now a little bit wary of them.
Yeah, much so.
We've gone through a transition period.
Companies
have started thinking, okay, so we actually do need to look into it and research and put a bit of science into our lighting. And I believe now LEDs moving in the right direction.
I think what we've got in the likes of Spectrum King is you have a lighting company that have, you know, that are interested in the industry, have an interest in the industry, shall we say, and, you know, seen an opportunity and thought, like, this is crazy, you know, it needs to be done right, and they've put the research in, and they've got, you know, the diodes producing a really intense level of light, and they've also, you know, gone for what we'd say, because the diodes enable you to do it, they've gone for a fuller spectrum, which is, you know, which is right, really. Mm. It's difficult at times when we talk about it ourselves. Spectrum and intensity of light, I think, is where people are kind of using these products, and they're maybe not getting the result that they expect. We're talking about things like, you know, people aren't having it close enough to the plants because you can do with LEDs.
Yeah.
Also, you can stand having your temperature a little bit higher.
Yeah.
You know, with HPS, you've got 1,000 watt in there, or even 600 watt. They kick out a lot of heat, so the plant's used to being, even though you're trying to keep it down, it's used to that because of the intensity's different from an LED.
Yeah.
You can stand
a different type of growing,
a little bit higher. Yeah. So there are, you have to be a little bit sympathetic to, it's a different setup, but also there's a genetic element as well, we feel. So you've got effectively, like, I work in animal nutrition as well, and you're looking at, you know, farmers talk about the difference between Holsteins and Jerseys for dairy and this kind of stuff. Like, effectively, these animals are bred over years and years, you know, over the last 100 years, selectively bred to perform in certain conditions.
Yeah.
That's effectively what people are doing with plants over the last 50 years in our industry. You're selecting those plants which perform well in those conditions and breeding it or cloning it.
Yeah, and selling for those.
Yeah, but they have developed over the last 50 years under HPS, under that spectrum and that type of light.
Mm.
So it's either going to take that plant a couple of goes to learn, to change, and develop to the new spectrum, or you look at the different genetics which work well in that spectrum.
Okay.
So that's the interesting thing for us.
Yeah. What the products, because you've got the SK400, which was one of the most, it's probably the most sold product.
Yeah, so
Spectrum King.
Over the last 12 months, we were doing 100 units a month on that, which is, from a business point of view, it's good revenue, but it was really nice to see the product going. You know, we know that Budmaster was selling quite a few. Mm. When we first started looking into it, I guess it surprised us a little bit as how many people were buying LEDs, because we kind of thought, ah, oh, they're too expensive. And I was like, crikey, people are buying these things.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, Spectrum King comes in and it's cheaper than, you know, Budmaster for the same sort of output and more intensity. So from that point of view, I think it was really well taken up. We've heard, like, people getting amazing results of it, as well as people doing okay. And then you have the 600s come through, so that's, they've developed something that will compete with 1,000 watt. Initially, all the videos were talking about how this 400 watt light was going to compete with thousands.
Yeah.
We never, like, here in the UK, we would never say that because we're very sort of cautious.
Trying to be as honest as possible.
Very much so. We don't want to set ourselves up for failure, never mind your customer. So we always aimed it at kind of over 600 or at least compete with a 600. So the 600 watt Spectrum King is aimed then at competing with the thousands.
Okay.
And when you see it on, like,
it's
serious amount of light, isn't it?
Like, unfortunately, because the iPhone cameras are that good. When you flashed up the SK600, it just obliterates the shop with light.
Yeah.
And we're like, wow, that's impressive. Let's get the iPhone and show everyone. And because there's like this high definition capture or something, it's like, can't tell the difference. I couldn't get it across, but trust me, the output
way,
is impressive.
Really does, yeah.
And then the longevity of them, the 50,000 hours, the lack of heat. You can understand
the
why
warranty,
people are. Yeah, the warranties. Yeah. What is it? 3 year? Spectrum King's manufacturer's warranty.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
We give a 1 year warranty anyway as well. It's easy to see why they're doing well. And now you've gone. Got the mother.
Yeah,
the mother
so,
light,
got, so they've gone down the smaller end as well. So you got their 100 watt unit, and there are two versions. So there's a mother's little helper, and then there's a closet case.
Yeah.
So mother's little helper is designed as a mother night, effectively, and then closet case is more kind of a full spectrum grow.
Yeah.
So you can have that in a, you know, you've got your little 800 height or whatever, you know, small tents. Closets, so yeah, that's more of a full spectrum, whereas the mother's helper is designed for sort of propping and early veg and mother plants. But the same quality, the same standards. When you see the unit, like, it's lightweight, but it's absolutely solid.
Yeah, it's when really, you know,
really
you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the interesting thing in terms of the jump that Spectrum King, I think, made in terms of the intensity is looking at the actual chip, the board that the diode's mounted on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of inefficiencies in that. So, as we know, like, air inhibits electrical flow.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to transport that through the board, any air around there. So it's like a honeycomb structure.
Yeah.
So they really improve the density of the board.
Yeah.
And that's why they're getting much higher conversion of electricity through to the diode.
More efficient. It's light, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. But it's very, very powerful.
Mm. It's got our rating as well, anyway, because I wouldn't have brought it up.
No, appreciate it.
Our rating, it's got our approval, because I wouldn't have brought it up if we didn't like it.
Well, no, it's been, the thing is, from any customers out there listening, you know, you got the confidence that you guys, we know you have it tested properly. You got a guy, and the interesting thing for us is the guy has been testing it. He knows LEDs, he's been used many of them, you know, so he. Talking earlier about going through this process of learning to grow a bit more with LEDs, he's done all that and he's absolutely loves them to bits, doesn't he?
So I can only see LEDs improving. They're only going to come down in price as well. It's not like they're going to go up in price because the technology becomes more widely available. I imagine the cost should come down, make it more accessible for people.
Yeah, it absolutely should do. I mean, it's economies of scale with everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking earlier about people buying cheap lights and cheap products. That doesn't have the market, you know.
It's
without being funny, like, we don't want to slag off customers, but they're the ones that are, some of them were tied by a budget and that's all well and good,
yeah,
but some of them have been doing this for a long period of time and got money and could be buying better products and don't.
Yeah.
So in a way you're kind of driving the market yourselves. Ultimately, any market is decided by the consumer. I mean, you realise you have that power. Like, I myself and my wife made it just, you know, a few years ago. We're kind of like, I'm here hawking all this expensive stuff and telling people they need it, high quality. And when I go and buy a piece of furniture, I'm like, I'm as tight as a duck. You know, it's like, you need stop buying stuff that's going to last 2 years, buy something that's going to last 20 years.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, a few years ago, I kind of made that. I was like, you know,
practice
so
what you preach.
Absolutely, practice what you preach, you know. So. I don't want to be a hypocrite.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm sort of buying stuff, I try and buy quality as well. So, and I understand that I make the conscious decision to do that because, you know, when you, like, I guess, looking on the other side, there was a story a number of years ago about, like, Marks and Spencer's, effectively the clothes were exactly the same as the, do you know what I mean? It was just a different label on them, made from the same factory, similar quality materials, but Marks and Spencer's were just ripping the backside out of it, basically. So that's, I guess, from my point of view, I was going, well, you know,
got to be careful.
Yeah, in terms of, you know, there's no point paying, rewarding Marks and Spencer's for buying cheap stuff from a cheap factory, putting a flashy brand on it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think with things like Spectrum King, with Hyperfan, the value in the product is clear to see.
So you've got to, as the grower, as the shop owner, you've got to do your due diligence.
Yeah.
Listen to the podcast, because we try to be as, well, we are unbiased, and we're trying to be as ruthless as we can for bad products, and as informative and as promotional as we are for good products.
Mm-hmm.
But don't just listen to us, listen to what we're saying, make it trigger something in your mind and go off and do the proper reset. Have a look at 1, 2, 3, 4 forums. Don't just take one person's comment.
Absolutely. It's like anything you do, look research, you have to take a balanced view on everything, and you can look at people's motives for things, and you know, you can get sort of wound up in all of that as well. But at the end of the day, you got to take as much evidence as you can and make it the right decision. Find that balance in between. It's like, you know, to some degree, Amazon have a rating system for a reason.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if somebody's rating is 2 and another guy's rating's 5 and he sold 1,000 and he sold 20, you know, the guy that sold 1,000 has got a 5-star rating, there's a reason.
You know
what I mean? So we don't have that system in the industry. Difficult to do it, but at the same time, you've got to try and you need to just do your own research but you know, don't get wound up by and sort of pulled off by people slagging this, that and the other off. You know, I always find if people go too aggressive on abusing a product, there's a reason behind
it. They've got a bit of energy.
You like, when I give feedback on something, I'm trying to make it sort of clean cut and non-emotional,
because
should be factual at the end of the day.
Yeah. Right, let's round off CBD.
Okay.
MHRA reclassified it as a medicinal product.
Yeah.
It's not going to be great for people that need it straight away, but in the long run,
I think it is
beneficial.
Yeah, they've made the decision for the right reason, and I think there's a fair chance that they'll put some kind of system in place, you know, in the next few months, I would imagine, because the pressure they're getting, they understand that people need access to the product for a variety of different reasons, and it's going to be years before even big pharmaceutical companies can do the efficacy trials to get products authorised for all the different myriad of things that it treats, you know. So I think they understand they need to do something, and there's, you know, a couple of different options there in terms of the groups that are available to, they're looking to provide regulation, so I'm sure they'll put something in place.
So essentially it is beneficial. You know what you're getting. Any interactions have been looked at, so when you end up spending your money on this, on a CBD product, you can be pretty much rest assured it's going to have
something else. It's going to maybe drag it on a bit longer, but it's something actually that I was thinking about when all of this sort of came out, is that, so we sell Indoka, and it's an expensive product, and to be fair, probably too expensive. I think they are being a bit greedy, but regardless of that, quality products cost money. I know we're just talking about quality and all the rest, but something that people maybe need to think about is the fact that if you want a product that is of that quality and consistency, that it's effectively a medicinal type grade product without being registered as such, that's going to cost money. Now, if you go and you get a prescription from your doctor in this country, you have no idea what the true cost of that drug is. You know,
the so guys are living in the US definitely do. Cause
they get it exactly. Sure, they got to pay for it. So from our point of view here, we're kind of like, we have no idea. I personally, I'm on an inhaler and a nasal spray at the minute for my snoring and stuff. It's like, I've no idea. I pay like whatever it is, £8, and it lasts me a couple of months.
Yeah.
So it's like £16 every 2 months. But for all I know, that could be £100.
Yeah,
I've literally no idea what that costs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's any way to find out. I have no idea. So just a perspective on the cost of CBD products as well. So the reason we sell those products is because they're certified and are of that quality.
Yeah.
That comes at an element of a price. There are products out there that are, like, you know, people selling 10% products at £50 for 100 mil. It's like, it's not worth, how do you even do that? So it calls into question the quality behind the product, and if you can do it that cheap, maybe that's what the price should be, but it seems strange that other people, you know, the market level is kind of here and that's right down here. Yeah. It's very strange.
It'll even itself out once all
yeah, it should do. Yeah. Through, yeah. But it's just a different that perspective of we don't know what our drugs, like, what medicinal products cost. We've no idea what that is.
So. Well, the I've really enjoyed that conversation.
Yeah, it's been brilliant.
I would like to say that HID, we had a conversation for about half an hour before we came live and on the podcast, and we haven't discussed absolutely everything that we talked about, but please be rest assured that HID have got the right framework in place. Definitely you're doing the right things for the legalisation and proper getting proper quality products out there. So I you've got my back, and I really respect what you're doing as well. So
appreciate it very much.
Your social media, you've got to talk about your social media. If people want to find out more, where did you go?
So we've got a Facebook page, which will be, you'll see increasing posts on there.
Yeah.
We've got a YouTube video channel, which we'll be posting a lot of content on over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
Instagram for, you know, pictures and things. We're trying to up our game on that in terms of the you know, putting interesting pictures and things. So that's the main thing, really, is the YouTube, the Facebook and the Instagram.
Yeah. If you Google, though, don't just type in HID. Yeah.
HydroIndustryDirect.com is the website, so check that out. But I'm sure if you go into YouTube and put in HydroIndustryDirect, should be up there. Yeah. Like, we're trying, doing our best. As I said to you before, if you're talking about poor quality products and trying to kind of change the market and change people's perceptions, we're very much in line with that. So
you're on our team.
We're sick of it, really. Yeah. And people need to understand, we're talking about quality comes at a price, etc. But in this game, you know, the end produce has a value. Yeah, so you know, the more you, within reason, up to a point, the more value you put in the quality of equipment, the more you're going to get out the other end. So we want to, you know, make sure that information gets across to consumers, so that stores that aren't really, you know, putting that message across to the consumers, we're doing that and representing our manufacturers the best we can, so that we're getting like the likes of Spectrum King and Fresh and everyone else, so that, you know, the message is clear, that people understand the reasons why you should be buying this stuff.
High quality.
Yeah, exactly. Because not every shop goes, you know, most of them are great, but they don't all go into the kind of detail that we would or you would.
Listen, I'm really impressed with that conversation that we had before, and hopefully there's a lot of good things to come in the future.
I'll definitely be back with some more stuff to talk about, don't we?
Excellent. Well, if you feel that this podcast and this live video has been of benefit to you, or you think it's going to be beneficial to your friends, give it a share for us, get it out there, spread the information.
Yeah.
All right. You've been with myself, Stephen. You've been with HID. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week, and we are with Tom Michael Smith, and we'll be talking about the Chelsea Flower Show and all the horticultural shows that are coming up, and some of the horticulture and the botany guys talking about their propagation techniques. So should be an interesting one.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much for tuning in, and speak to you soon. And everyone live, thank you very much for tuning in as always, and we'll be back next week. See you soon. Bye bye.